But Memorial Day, though that is its intended purpose and function, has for our society also become a day where we get to celebrate and enjoy athletic competition. There is not hardly a weekend that is finer than this weekend if you enjoy good athletic competition. Now, I know there's a lot of you out here. You're race junkies. Today's your day. At 12 noon, the Indianapolis 500 will start off. And as soon as the Indianapolis 500 is over, you've got the Coca-Cola 600. You've got 1,100 miles of racing you get to watch today. For those of you that are tennis fans, the French Open is going. Baseball fans, there's a dozen baseball games today. The basketball playoffs are in full swing. But there's actually a sporting event taking place very close to here that most of you probably don't even know about. Some of the finest athletes in a particular sport are up in Memphis this week at the Federal Express St. Jude Classic. The Professional Golf Association's closest stop to Boonville, Mississippi is this weekend. And most of y'all know I'm an avid golfer, so to speak. But I found an article about my sport that said something interesting. It said this. It said, new and technologically advanced golf balls fly further today than ever. Oversized drivers hit the ball straighter. Space-age materials make irons easier to swing. Ergonomically engineered putters roll the ball more precisely. Golf courses are more plentiful and maintained better. Instruction is more accessible at public and private clubs, not to mention every night on a cable television channel devoted entirely to the sport of golf. There is even a better golf tee, revamped to let the ball soar longer and more accurately. The only thing in golf that has not changed is the average score. Neither the average weekend player nor the world's best golfers have managed to get the ball in the hole any sooner. You know, over the last 20 to 30 years, in whatever sport you enjoy watching, there has been an incredible influx of technology. You watch the Indianapolis 500 today, and there will be men and women who will drive at speeds that A.J. Foyt dreamed of. There will be people today on the baseball field who will hit the ball further than Babe Ruth could have hoped for because of the technology and the equipment. And today, there are golfers. It amazed me when I looked up last night that the individual who's leading the tournament today, Justin Leonard, is average hitting the ball 291 yards off the tee, something that Arnold Palmer would have dreamed of, and yet there are 41 guys who have hit it further this week. But the amazing thing is this. We can drive faster. We can hit it further. We can somehow swing the bat faster. But the athlete has not become a better athlete. The equipment around him has gotten better, but he himself has not improved. In fact, there are some that will argue in the realm of baseball, football, and basketball that the athletes of today aren't as good as what they used to be. How many times have you heard that argument? Oh, if yesterday's athletes had today's equipment. That is that coffee shop argument that will never be solved. Babe Ruth will never get to swing an aluminum bat. I wish I could see it happen. It won't take place. But you know, I think the same can be said about our churches. I think the same could be said about our congregations. The same can be said about Christianity in America today. You look over the course of the last 20 to 30 years or even 100 years, we've got bigger churches. Do you know there was a phenomenon that took place in the late 70s and the early 80s, it was known as the megachurch. The megachurch was a church that was at least 2,000 people in size. Now they've actually upped that to 3,000 people. In 1991, there were 35, quote, megachurches in America. Churches that had at least 2,500 or 3,000 people or more. Today, there are over 500. Watch, quote, unquote, Christian television today, and you will see some monstrosities of some church buildings that exist. The thing that amazes me is this. We're building bigger churches, but we're having less baptisms. Interesting. You say, well, our church isn't quite that size. Oh, yeah, but it's a lot nicer than what it used to be 50 years ago. There's central air. We don't have to worry about a rear furnace. We've even got projection screens, state-of-the-art sound, state-of-the-art lighting, facilities that people in other countries would dream of. Let me ask you a question. Just because the words are on the screen and the music sounds better, does that mean our worship has become more authentic? No. In fact, let me argue the same coffee shop argument that takes place with sports when it comes to churches and Christianity. The technology and the things surrounding us have gotten better, but the person has possibly or probably even declined. Oh, I think of the missionaries of days gone by. What could William Carey do with a set of projection screens? What could Billy Sunday have done with the microphone system that we have? We've surrounded ourselves with the peripherals, but I'm here to claim that the person has not changed or has possibly declined. In Hebrews chapter 11, for those of you that were here last week, we're addressing the issues of what is a true demonstration of a life of faith. Hebrews chapter 11, the phrase by faith occurs 24 times. Last week we addressed the initial reality and the evidence of faith. That beautiful verse in verse 1, it says that faith is the substance of things hoped for. It is the evidence of things not seen. For by it the elders obtained a good report. If your name is found in Hebrews chapter 11, by the way, that's not the only people who, quote, made it to heaven out of the Old Testament. But if you find your name in Hebrews chapter 11, you excelled in areas above what others did. Today we look at the very first person that is mentioned. His name is Abel. It's found in verse 4. Interesting, God skipped over Adam and Eve, went straight to Abel in Hebrews chapter 11. So he's not the first human being that we have on the planet. But I do not think it is by accident. I do not think it is by coincidence. I believe it is by providence that the first person that's mentioned in Hebrews 11 as demonstrating faith demonstrated it in the area of worship. Which tells us this: if we don't get the worship right, we won't get the rest of it right either. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 4 says this: by faith, Abel offered unto God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, by which he obtained witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gifts, and by it he being dead yet speaketh. Turn with me to Genesis chapter 4. We turn today to the story of Cain and Abel. Obviously a very famous biblical story. You'll hardly find a children's book that is out there, or a children's nighttime Bible story book, that does not contain the story of Cain and Abel. It's the story of the first brotherly feud in the Bible. It's also the story of the first murder in the Bible. Cain and Abel were the first two sons of one Adam and Eve. And we know the story that they came to worship the Lord. One of them offered that which was pleasing. One of them offered that which was not pleasing. The one who offered that which was not pleasing by the name of Cain responded in a very detrimental manner, and in fact ended up killing his own brother. I'm going to read Genesis 4, verses 1 through 7, and then verse 16. It says, "And Adam knew Eve his wife, and she conceived and bore Cain, and said, I have gotten a man from the Lord. And she again bare his brother Abel. And Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. And in the process of time it came to pass that Cain brought of the fruit of the ground an offering unto the Lord. And Abel, he also brought of the firstlings of his flock, and of the fat thereof. And the Lord had respect unto Abel and to his offering. But unto Cain and to his offering he did not have respect. And Cain was very wroth, and his countenance fell. And the Lord said unto Cain, Why art thou wroth, and why is thy countenance fallen? If thou doest well, shalt thou not be accepted. If thou doest not well, sin lieth at the door. None of thee shall be his desire, and thou shalt rule over him." And the verses that transpire after that, we have the eventual murder of Abel by his brother Cain. But I want you to see what happens in verse 16. It says, "And Cain went out from the presence of the Lord and dwelt in the land of Nod on the east of Eden." John Steinbeck, the great American author, even wrote a classic book entitled East of Eden, based on this principle of what is it, or what takes place in a person's life that removes them from the presence of the Lord, pulls them out of favor of God's hand, and places them in a land the Bible calls Nod. Genesis chapter 4, we have a discussion, or we have an analysis, so to speak, of the differences between the worship of Abel and the worship of Cain. And I want to diagnose these two men. What took place? Who did what right? Who did what wrong? Because when you get to Hebrews chapter 11, God says that what Abel did was excellent, and what Cain did was not. Oh, to us who come to church as Cains, we ought to come as Abels. The first thing we need to address is this: what is God's requirement for worship? What does He require for authentic worship? Does He require fancy buildings? Does He require projection screens? Does He require state-of-the-art sound systems? Does He require central air? None of those things are on God's list, although I'm glad we have them. God's requirement for authentic worship is no more or no less than sacrifice. That's the word. The one word we Americans don't want to hear about is sacrifice, but that is what God requires. In fact, in Psalms 51, King David, after being addressed about the whole Bathsheba incident, he says, "If you required or if you desired the sacrifice of my hands, I would give it. But what you desire is the sacrifice of a humble and contrite heart." And that's the difference we have between Cain and Abel. As we look at these two men and the differences, let's look at Cain first. What was it that he did or did not do that was so detrimental to his relationship with God? And both of these men, we're going to look at the work that they did and the way in which they did it. So when we deal with Cain, what is the work? What are the things in which he did? What was the manner in which he presented himself before God? 1 John chapter 3, verse 12 says this, that the works of Cain were evil. That's pretty bold, isn't it? God makes a statement, a commentary in 1 John about what takes place in Genesis 4, that what Cain did was actually evil. So what was it that he did that God would define as evil? The first thing is this, he did not bring of the first fruits. We have very specifically, it says that Abel brought the firstling of his flock. He brought the first. He brought the best. Cain brought the leftovers. He brought that which was being cooled in the refrigerator, to use our terminology. He brought that which was convenient over that which was sacrificial. Let me be honest with you this morning. God is not interested in your sloppy seconds. He is not interested in riding second saddle in your life. God has one position in which he rides on the horse of your life, and that's first. If you put him second or third or fourth or wherever down the line, it always ends up like Cain. We'll get there in a moment. So the first thing that Cain did not do or did was that he did not bring the first fruits. God and his worship of him was a secondary thought in his mind, not primary. The second thing is this. It says that he brought of the ground. Now, here's where I want to delineate the difference between Cain and Abel. There is nothing wrong with being a tiller of the ground versus someone who keeps animals. Okay? It's not that one of the jobs was any more important than the other. What is interesting is this, and we'll see the difference with Abel in a moment. He did not bring anything that he had to sacrifice. He brought something that he actually planted and tilled with his own hands. In other words, what he did was this. He brought the work of his own hands. In Jeremiah chapter 9, beginning in verse 23, it says, "If any man glory, let him not glory in the works of his hands. Let him not glory in the things in which he's done. Let him glory in the Lord and he alone." See, oftentimes we come to, quote, worship and we bring the things of our life to God and say, "Hey, look how great I am. Look what I'm bringing to you." Folks, what we bring to God is not much more than sin. You think, "Oh, but look at the great things I'm bringing to the Lord." Folks, he is holy. You are not. And I think that the thing that we see with Cain is this. Because of his response, which is not good in just a moment. Here's a guy who came with a secondary motivation. He came bringing the sloppy second, so to speak, and bringing the things that he had created, the things that he had made, going, "Come on, God, please take this." God said, "I don't think so. I'm not interested." By the way, those of you who have been educators, those of you who have been instructors, and those of us who have been parents, we know this, that whoever, whether they're a child or whether they're a student, they will always try to bring the least amount of work to you to see what they can get away with. They want to always drop the bar to the lowest amount. And God says, "I don't think so. The bar must stay high." So what was the manner? What was the way in which Cain did this? What was the heart behind his evil works? Jude verse 4 calls Cain a despiser of God. It says that those who go the way of Cain, those who do the things that Cain did, that they actually are despising God. If the things of God are secondary on your list, and you desire to bring God the things of your hands versus sacrifice, which we'll delineate in just a moment, God says, "I'm despised by that." So what were the ways of Cain that were so erratic and improper? I think the first is this. He had a self-justified religion. You say, what is a self-justified religion? He left feeling good about himself. Folks, I'm going to be honest with you. America today is plagued with feel-good theology. We are plagued. Go to a Christian bookstore and look at all the books that tell you how good a person you are or can be. Folks, the men and the women in the Bible who end up getting into Hebrews chapter 11 never make the statement, look how good I am. They always make the statement, God, please accept me, a poor sinner. Look at Rahab. Rahab had nothing to brag about in her life. She's in Hebrews chapter 11. Abel didn't have anything to brag about his life. He's in Hebrews chapter 11. Yeah, there's some great men like Abraham and Jacob, but I look at Abraham, and he had a little incident with the Pharaoh and his wife slash half-sister. In other words, you never see anybody in Hebrews 11 saying, man, look how great it is. This feel-good theology that is permeating our society. He came with the attitude, I'm going to feel better when I leave. Let me make a statement. I'm absolutely honest. If you leave church feeling better about yourself than you came, we did something wrong. If you leave today feeling better about yourself, pat yourself on the back, what a good boy am I, then either A, we presented something improperly, or you misheard drastically. The message of the Bible, listen to me clearly, is negative. It's not a positive message. Is the cross positive? Absolutely. But there's a lot of material and negative of humanity getting us to the cross. The Bible has a negative message. Do you know Jesus was a negative preacher? He sure was. He told the Pharisees their converts are twice the sons of hell than they are. That's not real positive thinking, is it? I'll be honest with you. You pick up some of these books that are being written today by Christian authors and preachers. They talk about the success God wants you to have. They don't talk about sacrifice. They talk about the enjoyment that God wants you to have. They don't talk about the humbleness. See, Psalms 51, David said, God desires humility. God desires sacrifice. God desires contritement. You know, I've made this statement before. I'm going to stand by it. It's simply this. Jesus didn't go to the cross so you can drive a sports car. Now, if he allows you to drive a sports car, which I would love to have and don't, that's great. But the purpose of the cross is not your bank account. The purpose of the cross is not a promotion. The purpose of the cross is not central air conditioning in a plush house. The purpose of the cross is sacrifice for the sins of humanity. The very breath you had in your lungs this morning was a gift of God you didn't deserve. He was self-justified. He tried to feel good about himself, so to speak. But I think the second thing, or the second way of Cain, where he messed up was this. He had a heart problem. You know, we mentioned the other week that the root always eventually reveals the fruit. In other words, who you are on the inside will ultimately manifest yourself on the outside. Look what happens in verse 5. But unto Cain and to his offering, God had not respect. We'll talk about this in a moment. Basically, God said, you didn't bring the right thing. And Cain was wroth and his countenance fell. He was angry. He was bitter. Now, folks, I'm going to give you all a little test in your life. When you've got issues and struggles with people and the things that they're doing and the lifestyles which they have, just go to the book of Galatians and look up the fruits of the Spirit. Love, joy, peace, gentleness, temperance, self-control. I don't see bitter. I don't see anger. I don't see maliciousness. I don't see bitingness. None of those things are listed as fruit of the Spirit. In fact, a couple of verses up, they're listed as the fruit of the flesh. What you express on the outside is ultimately a picture of what you see on the inside. Now, I'm not going to go a long ways with this, but it doesn't take, you don't have to go far to find a group of Christians who are bitter and mad and angry about things. It's because it's Cain coming out, not Abel. So how do you get your heart right to get the outside right? You know, I think there's three areas before we specifically deal with Abel. All three areas are going to hurt, and that's just too bad. Here we go. It deals with your time. It deals with your talents, and it deals with your treasures. Do you, or do I, give God the first fruits of our time? You know, we talk about tithing all the time, 10% of our finances. How about 10% of your time? How about 2.4 hours a day? Well, that'd take up some time, wouldn't it? Okay, you've got to sleep 6, quote, 8 hours a night. So let's just say that we have 18 hours in a day. Okay, that's great, 1.8 hours. Let's give God 90 to 100 minutes of our day. You know what frightens me? You go to a Christian bookstore today, they've got the 1-minute devotionals. The 10-minute devotionals. You know what that tells me? That tells me that we've bought into the mentality of Cain that you can get in and out in 10 minutes and everything's okay. Just spend 1 minute with God and you're good. Very few of us tithe our time. How about our talents? How about giving of our talents? Does God have the first fruits of our talents? And there are some of you that are incredibly gifted in a lot of things that you're not using for the Lord. There's a lot of businessmen who have the ability to do a lot of things in the business world who aren't doing it to benefit the Lord. They're doing it to benefit themselves. We've got people who can sing, but they have their mouths shut. We have people who are great at working with children who aren't helping with children. We got people who can handle working with teenagers who are not working with teenagers. We got people that love senior adults who aren't working with senior adults. Let me be honest with you. God gave me one talent in this world, and it's talking. That's it. I do some other things okay, but I'm here to testify. If there's one thing I do well, and Tracy will testify, I can talk louder, longer, and faster than almost anybody you can find. I can do it. I can talk. My grandfather said this about me when I was a young child. He said, quote, he's either going to be a preacher or a used car salesman. Now, what does that tell you? That tells you I could take my grandpa and I could talk him into anything I wanted him to do. I can sell ice to Eskimos. I can do it. That is a gift that God has given me. I've got the gift of gab. I'm going to be completely honest with you. I can make a lot more money and have a lot more stuff and a lot more fame using this voice in other arenas. I could. There's a lot of other ways to make a lot more money using your voice and talking. But I'm going to tell you something. I came to the point in my life some years ago where I said, the talent that God gave me, I'm going to use it for Him and let Him work out the details. Let me ask you, the talents, hopefully it's plural, that God has given you, are they being used for the Lord or for your own glory and honor? And then the third one, treasure. Ouch. Do we give the first fruits of our finances? How many of you have had this problem in your life? It's the first of the month and you have this thought, you know, I really need to be faithful in giving to the Lord. I really need to tithe. I need to be faithful in that area. You say, but there's some things coming up. I tell you what, at the end of the month, I'll take care of all that stuff. Have you ever done that in your life? Let me tell you what's going to happen at the end of the month. There's going to actually be less there than there was at the first. And the problem is, we do that all the time with our finances. We say, hey, God, I'll give you what's left over. That's what Cain did. He gave God what was left over instead of giving him the first. I'm going to be completely honest with you. If you're struggling financially, give to God first. If you're struggling with allotting your time during the day, give to God first. If you're struggling saying, I don't know what to do, I just don't have purpose in life, find out what you do, what God's gifted you, and give it to God first. Let Him work it out. Now, let me be transparent with you. I do not have any problem giving my treasure to God. The first of the month, every year, that's the first check that is written. I don't have a problem. In fact, I get all nervous all the time, and some of you have heard me say this, Tracy's always coming up with some new ministry we've got to support. But we don't have a problem with that. We support ministries all over the world. We don't have a problem giving the first fruits of our finances. We don't have a problem giving of the first fruits of our talents. As I mentioned, I could be doing a lot of other things, making a lot more money, but I choose to place God first. But let me be transparent with you. I have difficulty giving God the first fruits of my time. Ask my wife how I get up in the morning. It is not pretty. It's ugly. All right? It's just flat ugly how I get up in the morning. I can stay up all night. I mean, I can do it. If I were going to youth camp this next week, I could put any teenager to shame. I can stay up all night with the best of them. You know, oftentimes in my own mind, I say, well, God, you know, my best time's really between midnight and 2 anyway. So if I give you between midnight and 2, that's giving you the first fruits. You know, that's ironic because I do that almost every night and I fall asleep with my nose in the Bible. Well, that was real fruitful, wasn't it? Nose in the Bible, forgetting the last thing that I read for the last 10 minutes. My struggle is this. I have a hard time making it a point to give God the first fruits of my time. I think every one of us struggles with one of those, if not most of those areas. That's exactly what Cain did. He gave God the, quote, sloppy seconds of his gifts. He gave God the sloppy seconds of all of his stuff. So we find Abel. What is it that Abel did? How does he fit into the requirements of God? What does he do that gives us a picture from Hebrews 11:4. That's who I want to be like. It's verse 4 of Genesis 4. Abel brought the firstlings of his flock and of the fat thereof. Hebrews 11:4 says what he did was an excellent work for God, that he actually had respect unto what he did. So what was his work? The first thing is this. He gave of the first fruits. He gave of the first fruits. Does God have the first of whatever in your life? I've never met a person who tithed that went bankrupt. I've never met a person who placed the gift that God gave on their life first that was miserable and unhappy. And honestly, I've never met a person who gets up and gives the first of their time to the Lord that is not pleased and satisfied. I've yet to meet it. But I find a lot of people who give God second best in a lot of things that are miserable. Abel's difference was he gave of the first fruits. Here's the second aspect about his work is this. He gave sacrificially. You say, what is the definition of a sacrifice? Something's got to die. That's what a sacrifice is. If something doesn't die, sacrifice did not take place. Let me speak to my own life. For me to get up in the morning, I have got to die to self. For some of you, it comes to giving of your financial resources, you need to die to materialism. To some of you who need to give of your talents, you need to die to pride. There's a lot of death that needs to take place in order to sacrifice. It says he gave of the first flock. He actually sacrificed and killed an animal. What he did was sacrificial in nature. Which brings me to the way or the heart of Abel. What was his mentality on the inside that was so different than Cain? The first is this, and it ties in with the sacrifice. He recognized his sinfulness. Go back to chapter 3, verse 21. The Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve have unfortunately sinned. What did they do to try to cover their sin? They did an act of convenience, not sacrifice. They realized they had messed up. They realized they had sinned. They needed to, quote, be right with God. So they grabbed what they could find, a bunch of fig leaves, and they covered themselves and said, let's just get what's convenient. Let's get what we already have. Let's get what we can afford and put it across. Verse 21 of chapter 3, God takes care of this little issue. It says, unto Adam also and to his wife did the Lord God make coats of skins and clothe them. Did you know that the first being on this planet, animal and or human, that loses his life is in Genesis 3:21, that God the Creator takes the life of an animal as a sacrifice to cover, quote, the sins of Adam and Eve. A proper heart of worship. When we sing like we did a while ago, here I am to worship. If worship is not recognizing one's sinfulness, it is off track. The second thing is this. The worship of Abel actually pictured Jesus. I hope you still have your thumb over in Hebrews 11, because I want you to turn to Hebrews chapter 12. In Hebrews chapter 12, verse 24. By the way, there are several men and women who are listed in Hebrews 11. Only one of those men is listed in chapter 11 and 12. And it's our boy Abel this morning. Hebrews 12:24, and it says, unto Jesus, the mediator of the new covenant, and to the blood of sprinkling that speaketh better things than even that of Abel. In other words, it says, the thing that sets us apart, the thing that gives us access to God is this. It's the blood that Jesus Christ sacrificed on the cross. And what Jesus did, the sacrifice that he offered, the blood that was spilt, it says it's even better than Abel. In other words, what Abel did pictured what Jesus was going to do. The offering of a blood sacrifice. Hebrews chapter 9, verse 22 says, without the shedding of blood, there is no remission of sins. Without a relationship with Jesus Christ, who spilled his blood on the cross, there is no forgiveness of sins. You can go to church every week and it doesn't make a lick of difference. I'm going to be honest with you. You can be baptized in every swimming pool in the county. Doesn't matter. Until the sacrifice of Jesus Christ has been applied to your life, it does not matter. And even Hebrews 12:24 testifies that what Jesus did, because it allowed sin to be forgiven of all mankind, is a picture of, but better than Abel. So when it comes to the requirement of worship, we have a man by the name of Cain whose works were deemed evil because his heart was wrong. He did not put the first fruits first. And then we have Abel, a man who humbly and contritely and sacrificially gave to God, understanding his own sinfulness. That's the requirement. So how does God respond to these two men? To one of them, it says he gives respect. To the other, it says he does not. In simplistic terms, to Abel, he gives a thumbs up. To Cain, he gives a thumbs down. But I want to specifically look at Cain today, because I would be willing to bet that most of us worship like Cain than Abel. What was it that happened? What did God respond to him? What did God say to Cain that said, hey, buddy, you need to get on the right track? The first is this. It's in verse 7. It says, if thou doest well, shalt thou not be accepted. If thou doest not well, sin lieth at the door. The first mention of the word sin in the Bible is with Cain. The response that God has to Cain is this. He says, all right, buddy, I'm giving you the thumbs down. If you do not change things, sin lies at the door. Now, that's interesting. Why did God not say, you've already sinned, buddy? You need to repent. Well, what's interesting about the Old Testament, quote, sacrificial system, which is different than today, is this. When they would come to, quote, church, when they would present their sacrifice, by the way, even Mary and Joseph, the earthly parents of Jesus, did this. Remember, 8 days after Jesus' birth, Joseph comes in with two turtle doves, a pigeon. They had to offer a sacrifice. They had to give of themselves in order to say, all right, God, I'm doing this sacrificially. When they did that, oftentimes they would come to the temple, and there were priests there that graded your sacrifice. By the way, this is why Jesus got upset with the money changers. Remember the people in the Bible that Jesus, I mean, he really had a time with these guys because money was being exchanged in the temple. And he said, guys, you don't need to be doing that stuff. It had nothing to do with the money. It had everything to do with the heart. Because here's what they were doing. People would come and give of the first of their fruits. And they'd say, well, you know what? It may look good, but we need to make some cash flow here. So why don't you take ours, because ours is better. The original purpose of those men in the temple was this. When somebody came with improper sacrifices, they were to pull what Nathan did to King David. They were to confront them with their sin and say, guess what? You obviously didn't give of the first fruits. You've got two choices. You can either leave and go back home and suffer the consequences thereof, or you can sacrifice right now and get things right. The original intent and the purpose of those guys at that table was to make sure that when people sacrificed, they did it properly. When they would come to sacrifice at the temple, if their sacrifice was deemed inappropriate, several options. If they lived in the local area, they could go back to their home and get the first of the flock rather than the last. If what they brought had a blemish with them. Or maybe they'd had a bad season that year and what they came to give wasn't up to par. They could then sacrifice of their monetary means and buy that which would be proper. But the key is this. They had all day to fix it. You know the old phrase, don't let the sun go down on your anger? That comes from an interpretation of Jesus from the Old Testament system when he said this. If you've got a matter with your brother that needs to be fixed, leave the altar, go and fix it, but be back before the sun sets. The whole point was this. When they came to offer themselves, they had the whole day to get it right. So when he tells Cain, buddy, you get a thumbs down, you've got the day to get it right. False or improper worship always leads to sin. Always leads to sin. It may not, quote unquote, be sin at that moment, but it always eventually leads to sin. The second result of false worship is this. It doesn't just hurt you, it hurts those around you. I guess the most vivid illustration I've got of this, and unfortunately it's a tad bit personal with some friends and family in my life, are drug addicts. You know, drug addicts are the most selfish people on the planet. They are. You know why? Because drug addicts think that the only person they hurt is themselves. They say, well, I'm the only person I'm hurting. I'm the one actually ingesting the material. I'm the only one it's hurting. No, they're not. In fact, someone who's got a struggle with any type of an addiction not only harms themselves, they harm everybody around them. No man is an island. And if there is something in your life that is not right with God, it doesn't just affect you. It affects everybody around you. By the way, if there's something in your life that's not right with the Lord and you refuse to address it, it will hurt the church. It'll rub off on other people. We'll start to ignore this and that. Jesus said a little leaven messes up the whole loaf. In other words, if it's not addressed, it doesn't just affect you. Sometimes we think, well, I'll just go to church and this is my problem. No, it's our problem. It's not just your problem. It's our problem. Why do you think Nathan got in the face of King David one day? Was King David's whole incident with Bathsheba just King David's problem? Obviously not. It was the whole nation's problem. And I think one of the problems we got is we think our problems are only our problems. The reality of the matter is our problems affect those around us too. So when our worship is false, when our works are evil, when we do the things of Cain and not the things of Abel, it leads to sin. It causes harm to us and those around us. But here's the third and probably the worst aspect. It always leads to the land of Nod. False worship or improperly presenting ourselves before God always leads to the land of Nod. There is a fascinating Bible story Bible study that you can do on your own time. It is simply this. Look, particularly in the Old Testament, but all through Scripture, look at what happens when people go east versus west. You know the old phrase, go west, young man? That phrase was pawned, you know, back in the early 1800s in the United States of America. However, it actually comes from the Bible. Abraham goes west, Lot goes east. Cain goes east. Let me give you a few demonstrations. When Adam was removed from the Garden of Eden, what direction did God remove him? East of the garden. When Cain presented false worship, it says that he went to Nod in verse 16, which was east of Eden. As I mentioned just a moment ago, when Abraham and Lot found out that they had too many cows and too many men and not enough space, and Abraham said, which direction do you want to go? He said, I want to go east to Sodom and Gomorrah. Not a good call, was it? Every time they go east, it ends up being a bad decision. When Jacob ran from Esau, he ran east. When the 12 tribes of Israel were taken captive, the reason they were taken captive is because instead of living west of the Jordan, they decided to go to the east side of the Jordan River. On the opposite spectrum, when Abraham was called out by God, Abraham of the Chaldees, when he said, from the land of Ur, go out, which direction did Abraham go? He went west. By the way, the entrance into that temple of the Old Testament, it was specifically mentioned by God that you were to enter from east to west. When the Jews returned from the exile that they had in Egypt, remember they crossed the Red Sea? And for those of you who've ever done a map, you know those maps we have in the Sunday school rooms, there's actually a purpose for those things. When they crossed the Red Sea, they went to the Promised Land. God had them go over the Jordan, entering east to west. It would have been a shorter trip just to go straight north. But God said, no, 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 I want you to go east to west. You say, why is that? Which way does planet Earth spin? East. Do you realize if you're going east, you're going the same way as the world? To go west is to go against the grain of the world. When God told those people in the Old Testament, I want you to enter the temple west, what they may not have realized because science hadn't caught up then is they were actually going the direction opposite of the world. Let me give you a hint. If you're going the same direction as the world is going, you're going the direction of Cain. Because you're emulating him and doing the things of the world. What direction does the sun go? East to west. Earth spins west to east. In Malachi chapter 4, Jesus is called the sun, S-U-N, of righteousness. Did you know that every morning when you get up, God is preaching you a sermon? Every morning when you get up, the sun pictures that the direction you ought to go is the opposite of humanity. The direction you ought to go is the opposite of the world, because that's exactly what Jesus did. That's exactly what Abel did. And the guy who went the way of the world was a guy by the name of Cain, and he ended up leading to sin and in the land of Nod. Some years ago, there's a contemporary Christian artist by the name of Susan Ashton who wrote a song entitled The Land of Nod. And I think this so pictures not what only Cain experienced, but the life of many of us in our churches. It says this, it's not black, but it's not white. It's not darkness, but it's not light. It's not cool, but it's not hot. No, it's something it should be, but I know it's not. Listen to this. Because we are comfortable here in our slumber, lullabied by the heart of God, but we can't be alive in His number while living in the land of Nod. So we lie down by the light of the lamp, unaware that there is evil in our camp. And we snooze and we snore, and sometimes it's so loud we cannot even hear the lion roar. I want to repeat that last verse again. We lie down by the light of the lamp, unaware there's evil in our camp. In other words, if we come to a point we're not willing to admit there's sin in our life, we're not willing to admit there are imperfections in our life, if we're willing to say, I've arrived, I've made it, everything I do is okay with God, we're snoozing and we're snoring, and sometimes it's so loud you cannot hear the lion roar. 1 Peter chapter 5 says that lion is Satan himself. Cain was a type or a picture of a natural religious person who believes in God, believes in being faithful to their religion, but only doing so after his own will in his own ways, and ultimately rejects redemption by blood. Let me ask you this morning, you in the lane of Nod? You out there just kind of wandering? You don't quite know what's right, what's wrong? Let me give you the illustration I give in my own life. I've said this to some of you before. I feel like I'm just 2 inches off center. Imagine a train with me. You've got a train that's on a track. Those tracks often hundreds of miles, if not thousands of miles long. If you're 2 inches off the track, you can see the track in front of you. You can see the track behind you. You've got coal in the train. You're ready to go. You can blow the whistle. There's passengers back there. When you crank up the engine, nothing happens. You just sit there and you spin because the wheels aren't on the track. That's exactly what happened in Cain's life. That's what happens in our life. We see the track, we see the train, all the outside elements look like everything's okay. The problem is you're not sitting on the track. And when you're not sitting on the track, you cannot go to the next location or destination. That is today's land of Nod. The land of Nod is the ultimate result of false, improper worship. So if you feel like this morning you're in the land of Nod, we've just given you the antidote. Are you Abel or are you Cain? In simplistic terms, the way to get on the track, the way to get out of the lane of Nod, is to give the Lord of the first fruits. Give Him the first fruits of your time. Give Him the first fruits of your talents. Give Him the first fruits of your treasures. And God will have respect upon you. And like Hebrews 11:4, will say that what you're doing is excellent. Anything less is sloppy seconds. And God does not give respect to. What do you need to do? Let's pray.